involved, everyone.
Let's get dangerous.
This is so cool.
I know.
It feels so right.
With James E. Lee.
He's opening our minds to new ideas. Kill him.
Who is that guy?
Your mama.
You just made the list.
Oh, wait, you're serious. Let me laugh even harder.
It's all in football.
Sure, we talk about it all the time.
Really?
No. Burn.
What is up, you ducks? It is All in Football on FTN Fantasy. As a reminder, yes, everything is under the FTN Fantasy umbrella. Now, it is one location, and if you want to be not the 1% actually watching this, but the 99% who are listening at this time of the season, at least I hate to do this because it always sounds so shillish, but please like and subscribe over on YouTube, too, to help that out, because the tens of thousands of you on listening and not watching, but this is why, because you get to watch and see the fun behind me, and including somebody who appreciates a lot what's going on behind me. It is Rich Rebar at Lord Reebs. One of the best in the business, I always say, whether or not he's going to be like all like, oh, you don't have to say that. I actually truly believe it, and actually also a good friend, good dude to hang out with. How's it going, man? Are you planning to get some sleep in about a week and a half like the rest of us?
No, it's been nice. You know, I had to, you know, post Super Bowl, it's been good. You know, I got to catch up on a lot of pop culture and, you know, video games we missed out during the season, but we're back. I mean, April's just been like, you know, back to draft month. Rookie drafts are going to be kicking off in all these dynasty leagues. It's kind of just the NFL season's back again, because we'll get schedule release. We'll get a little bit of a break, what, like May, June. And then, I mean, it's before we know it, it'll be 4th of July and training camps will be here. And we'll be arguing, trying to talk over each other about like what season long takes, you know, we have.
Of course. And if you want to check out all of Rich's work over at Sharp Football Analysis, please do so. One of the best when it comes to in-season stuff, very much similar but different than kind of what I do in this season, where it's like game previews, but he pulls out all these little nuggets that are always great to look at for every single game, and including what we're going to talk about today, similar to what I do, but also the next level. Like, I have two sentences on every single player. Rich has like two pages almost on every single player. If you want to go over and check out all of it, like, we're not going to get to everybody. There's no possible way. We would have a 75-hour show if we did, and people would tune out probably a couple hours in. But actually, you know what? That's a good question.
Hey, a couple hours would be good. It's going to be a good run.
Yeah, it would. We could like compete. Like, I don't know. Actually, you know what? Like, hour 60 might be hilarious just from the sleep depravity. Depravity? Did I just make up a word? I don't know. I wanted to ask you, what did you play in your offseason, like, little break that we got after the Super Bowl? Like, what did you catch up on? What was the first game you popped in? Because, you know, I told you what my first game was going to be. Do you remember?
Yeah. I played Baldur's Gate 3 was my first game. I did play Spider-Man 2 during the season. I was able to get it in.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I mean, because the Spider-Man games are like, they're like 20 to 25 hours if you try to like max out and like collect everything, which isn't bad.
You have that in the season? You actually have that 20?
Yeah, on like Saturdays and stuff, you can get in like a good run, you know, when the weather's bad. But yeah, I did get that one in. And I think my son played it like four times.
Did he? So are we far enough out that I can ask you a spoiler question about the game? Or like, did I like at least alerted everybody?
That's up to the audience.
Well, spoiler alert, if you're watching, you might want to put me on mute for like 1 minute, or come back if you're listening to the podcast. But Rich, the part where Spider-Man got, I'll try to like be semi not spoiler, when he got something in the chest, did you actually think they were going to like pull a twist on us and that he was going somewhere, not coming back, if you get what I'm just kind of leading to? Like, it actually got me. It tricked me, because the way that they did it with the scene.
Yeah, I mean, they did a really good job with it. I didn't really think that they would. You know, what's funny is one of the parts that in a video game that did that to me was the first Last of Us game, when you know, when you're in the science building and you open up, and then the very next scene. So at that point, I wasn't working like full time in the fantasy industry. Not to make this a long video game diatribe,
no,
but like
what we do when we,
you know, so I'm getting up every day to, you know, to go to work at, you know, 5:30, and I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna get through this one part, and then I'm gonna go to bed, get ready for work the next day. And you know, you go through the, you know, and Joel goes through like the spike in the science thing, and you open up the next scene as you know, and you're just like, oh my God, like, and you're just like, what is happening?
Well, you can just say it. It's way, way, way. I mean, we're like 15 years past spoilers now at this point.
But yeah, I mean, it's just wild when you think, because it's like that game effectively pulled it off. You're like, oh, I think Joel might be dead. Like, you know, yeah. It's like, oh, like I'm, you know, it's like, oh wow. Cause you like flash forward to the spring and you're just like, oh my goodness. It's just like, ah. Yeah, that was the best.
That got me too. Like, I was like, are we really continuing this game as Ellie? Like, is this like, yeah. What did I miss here? Like,
so, but then yeah, I stayed up because I had that happen. So I was like, oh, I got to stay up and see what happens. So, like, you know, you play that next part. And it's like, I just went in like eyes glossed over the next day to work and got through it. But first world problems, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, first world problems. And as you can see, this is what we do when we hang out. We talk video games. But actually, we're going to hang out again, probably watch SummerSlam again after the Flex Draft in New York. I don't know. We get like 10 plates of free wings, but we're talking fantasy today. We're not going to take up too much of your time. The most important thing, we got to get off the top, Rich. The Zach Wilson trade. Man, things are changing in Denver. Not just the uniforms, the quarterbacks. I look, this actually broke. I was on SiriusXM with Chris Meany yesterday, and it broke during a break, and we came back with it. And I said, you know what? Tongue in cheek. Like, we know Zach Wilson is heading towards, at least right now, he is heading towards being, what, a top 10 bust all time? The number two pick? Like, you don't get much worse than what he's been so far. I mean, we're talking Ryan Leaf territory almost here. But there have been glimmers, there have been flashes, and I did say this to Rich, I said this to Meany, I said, look, we sat here and apologized for Garrett Wilson and said, well, at least he did this with Zach Wilson, like, so imagine what he can do with Aaron Rodgers. So it's not like Zach Wilson's never had a good game. You can call up the Chiefs game. I don't think that Zach Wilson exists, but is there a world, Rich, where at least it's good enough that it's not full panic mode for Courtland Sutton? Let's just put it that way. Very simple. Courtland Sutton can still be a top 30 wide receiver.
I mean, maybe overall, like you could say, like he ended like wide receiver 29. Like on a week to week basis, though, are you ever going to be like comfortable? Assuming this Broncos depth chart stays similar, right?
Right.
Now, Robbie, right now their quarterback room is Jarrett Stidham, Zach Wilson, and Ben DiNucci. The little touch of DiNucci. There, and that's really all they got. And this is a team that doesn't have a second round pick because they traded for Sean Payton. They've got pick 12, which kind of puts them in like a nebulous strike zone to maybe land. Like, they're gonna need some magic if like a guy's at 12, or they decide they're gonna force one of the, you know, 5-6 year players at that point in the draft, which would be absolutely bonkers. I mean, if Bo Nix or Michael Penix get drafted by the Broncos or Raiders, I mean, these are going to be some of the oldest round one prospects we've had in the 2000s. The only three quarterbacks, yeah, I believe, that will be older than Michael Penix. These guys are only weeks apart, Bo Nix and Penix, are Brandon Weeden, which would never happen in like today's game. Like, no one would ever draft a 27-year-old quarterback. Carson Palmer and Jason Campbell are the other two guys that would be older than Penix and Bo Nix in the 2000s that would be taken in round one. So I think it would be a reach to take either of those guys. I mean, it's kind of an interesting, you know, place we're in with this draft class in general because of the COVID year stuff. Everyone get, you know, the extra year of eligibility. And those three quarterbacks, if you want to include Jaden Daniels, just like those guys really took advantage of that extra year. You know, if these guys would have typically had to come out a year ago, they're not even in the round one conversation, like, at all. None of those guys. But, you know, to tie it into the Broncos, though, I did these draft previews where I did the all 32 offensive rosters, went through every roster leading into the draft. Ray Summerlin did the defenses. And I threw it out there. I think the Broncos have the least inspiring roster in the NFL right now. I don't think it's necessarily the worst roster in the NFL. Like, they're not going to be the worst team in the NFL. But I think when you're just talking about, like, inspiring, like, what was the direction of this team? The Denver Broncos just don't have a lot. And you think of the good players that they actually have on their roster, you know, guys like, you know, Patrick Surtain or, you know, Garrett Bowles or Quinn Meinert. It's like, these are guys also that have expiring contracts. Like, they have to give these guys huge, like, big extensions right now already. I mean, the direction of this team, I just think it's in no man's land. And it's like, what do you do if you're the Denver Broncos? Like, you traded for a head coach. Like, you're kind of in a position where, like, you almost need to kind of punt this year. Like, you've got all the sunk costs into Russell Wilson's contract. That's fine. Pull the plug on it if it's not going to work. But don't try to kick the can. Like, don't try to put a Band-Aid over this thing with Bo Nix. Just swerve into it and be awful. Just swerve into this situation and be just – they should just be miserable this year. And I know that no one wants to do that. They've got those they've got new uniforms and whatever, but like, just be terrible, Broncos.
That's not going to help with the wins. I was going to say, what's going on right now is, I'll compare it to a team for anybody that actually cares about the NBA. I kind of lost my excitement for it also because I am a childhood and still to this, well, actually until this year, I gave up on my Bulls just like I gave up on my Giants 2 years ago because, I, like you said, directionless, rudderless. Like, they just stop with this, oh, look, we're the ninth seed, we won a play-in game and just got, you know, land-based in it. And now, like, DeRozan's a free, like, I actually think that's a good comparison. If you want to compare an NBA team to NFL team, it's like, what's the direction for the Bulls? You have some talent, they're all old and expiring. You have some young, but it's like, is this really going to be around by the time we're good? So I'm with you. I think they should kind of just let it go. But let's talk rookies, because that's what today is mostly about. It wasn't spending too much time on Zach Wilson. The first question off the top, for anybody that doesn't know, I talked about it last week as well, and I'll continue to talk about it, but for me, rookie process is very similar to what I do with my rankings, is I start with what I see on film. I hate using what I watch film. Like, I just hate that terminology. It sounds so like I grinded film, man. But anyway, I watch the players. I watch through college and I get my opinions, and then the metrics come out, the testing comes out, and then, you know, RAS and all that type of stuff. And then, like, I look for things that don't align with what I thought. So, like, if it does, I'm pretty much like, okay, cool. That's kind of what I feel. Let's continue with that. And then if any outliers, I'm like, let me go back. So this is now where I am. And when it comes to rankings, is my projections. If my projections are like way off from a player where I ranked, I'm like, okay, let me dive through this, go deeper. What did I miss? And then I come back, and that's where I get my second rounds of projections or rankings and projections. And the same thing with this is where I adjust my tiers when it comes to players. So for you, rookie process wise, what's your process? Is it more film? Is it more metrics? Is it a mix of both like I do? Or like, how do you come up with your rankings?
It ends up being a mix of both. I mean, I watch a little bit of college football during the season. Saturday is kind of my one day where I'm not like totally obligated to be plugged into the NFL. So I do like more family stuff on Saturdays. So I don't watch like religiously. I casually watch college football.
Same.
So at the end of the year, you know, I'm definitely putting all these guys into my prospect models. You know, I have one for all positions, quarterback, tight end, wide receiver, running back, different metrics go into those, different things kind of matter and are a bit larger signals for fantasy football. The other thing too, there also is when you get this bleed over this season, we see this a lot in the fantasy industry, especially where like everyone wants to be like an NFL scout, and I'm not an NFL scout. And I care about fantasy points, man. Like, I don't really care if a guy is going to be like a wide receiver three contributor in NFL offense. He's not going to score fantasy points. That's what I care about. I mean, that's what's going to win me money. That's going to win, you know, people that are in my audience money, you know, people that subscribe. So like, I'm not necessarily trying to like grind out all these micro edges and saying like all these, you know, players are going to turn into X, Y, and Z in the NFL. I'm looking for signals that are going to lead to fantasy points. And that's kind of what the models do. And if something's like you said, off kilter about a player, if someone pops in the model that doesn't necessarily like have the projected draft capital, then I'm going back and trying to check out some things and say like, well, why is this? It's just really hard too. Like when you look at just things from metric stance too, is like the transition from NFL, and we're seeing a little bit of transition to where the NFL game is starting to adopt some of the things that happen in college. Especially now when you're starting to see like the current defensive meta and we're in where we're not getting a lot of blitzing, we're getting not, you know, man coverage is kind of really kind of gone away. We're seeing more like match coverage, zone coverage, like all that stuff's kind of changing. We're seeing more like mobile quarterbacks, you know, enter the NFL. Offensive lines are a big problem currently in the NFL. Hopefully this draft class can help. That is a solid draft class, supposedly on paper for offensive line production. I'm not going to act like I'm Dave Gettleman and understand that I know every offensive lineman, but supposedly it's going to be a good offensive line draft. Cause when you look at just the offensive lines too, when I went through all these NFL rosters, I mean, everybody needs offensive linemen. Even the teams that have good offensive lines, like you've got contractual depth issues, like all these different, you know, things pulling in different various areas where there's just it's a weakness in the NFL right now. So we've got like kind of a deficiency for the NFL game. Quarterback play, big problem. Offensive line play, big problem. And wide receivers. And we're hoping that all those things kind of are boosted at least with this draft class, which are supposed to be strengths of a position in this draft class. But that's kind of it. You know, I'm looking, plugging guys in the model, kind of watching, you know, doing the same thing kind of everyone else does. But, you know, I care about those fantasy points. Now I'll let Matt Waldman figure out if these guys would be good NFL players or not.
Well, so for everybody, again, if you didn't watch last week with Thor Nystrom, we talked about this, and I said that like a lot of my comps that I put in there, like I actually, for what you're talking about, like I comp to what I think their fantasy production could be. Like some of mine don't line up perfectly. Like they're both 6'4", they both are 208 pounds, they both run a blank. Like what? No, it's kind of like, so I'll give you an example off the top. We're not talking about him today, but I brought up last week is like Marvin Harrison. A lot of people were draw out comparisons to AJ Green. It's like, I actually think his fantasy production could be DJ Moore. Not exactly the comp people throw out. Actually, I haven't seen anybody throw out that comp, but like when I talk about that. So I'm glad we're talking about that today. There's going to be a few outliers. Same thing I did with Thor last week. This isn't like, ha, I got you, Rich, or Rich isn't going to be here. Like, ha, you're stupid, Jake, that you're different than me. Just some differences we had in our opinions. But I wanted to kind of, before we get to running backs, I kind of want to like turn a question that a lot of people are asking and then kind of like, phrase it a little different. Like, so a lot of people are like, what's the best landing spot for blank? If I could put blank on this team, yeah, I see you laughing and shit because that's all anybody's been doing for the past 2 weeks. Like, I'm going to put this like the ideal draft. And the one that we see, Rich, and we know this, for fantasy, everybody's like, I don't care who it is, whoever the Cowboys take in round 2, 3, or 4 is going to be the dude, top 20 running back. Is that a potential trap? That's what I want to ask you. It's like, because that's what everybody's saying right now. They don't care who it is. They don't care if it's Brooks, Lloyd, Allen. They don't care if it ends up being round 4 and it's all the way down to Will Shipley. They don't care because there's such a need there. It's Rico Dowdle and dudes. Do you think that's a trap potentially falling into like, it doesn't matter who it is. The Cowboys need a running back, and obviously that's going to be the guy.
Well, as someone who invested in Tony Pollard last year, let me tell you, if you had Tony Pollard on your team, the Cowboys, being attachment to that offense wasn't a cure-all. You know, definitely when you look at this current iteration of where the Cowboys are right now, I mean, this is a team that's got a lot of needs, and this is a team that, especially when you look at, like, the offensive line, like, I mean, you lose Tyron Smith, you lose Tyler Biadasz to the starting center. Like, they're like Terrence Steele, they extend, but like that kind of feels like a faux extension. Like, should they have given that dude that contract? Probably right. Not based on everything he's done. Like, this offensive line isn't very good outside of CeeDee Lamb. Like, there's not a pass catcher you're like genuinely excited about on this. They have Martavis Bryant on their roster. Did you know that?
I did. I was I've already got my spreadsheet ready for after the draft to update for the projection. So I went through it. I'm like, wait, he's still in the league? I legitimately said that. I actually, wait, he's still in the league? Question mark.
He's in caught a pass in the NFL since 2018. He's on the Cowboys though right now, because this is where they are. Like, the Cowboys team building, like Dak is taking up 60% of their cap this year. They have to extend Dak, they have to send Micah Parsons, they have to extend CeeDee Lamb. Like, this roster is in some shape right now. So I mean, I don't think it's just a plug-in where you say like, all right, this guy's going to this Cowboys offense. We know the Cowboys last year, you know, scored like 30 points per game at home, you know, and then couldn't score on the road. And like, we're just going to plug this guy in again. Like, if you had Tony Pollard, like, you lived this life last year. It's just not a cure-all. Plus, it's not going to be a running back that goes with like first round capital either. Like, we just don't have one of those guys in this draft. We're hoping that guy, if it goes to the Cowboys, it's pick 56, right? Like, that's
right.
What you're looking at, and you're saying like, that's a strike zone. But what if it's pick 87, the Cowboys take running? Because this team has needs, like a lot of needs, like where they might not even force running back. Sure, they need a running back on paper, but like, are they going to force one at 56? Like, they need a lot of stuff that maybe is largely more important than running back. Again, maybe they just try to get through and throw veterans at this thing, or and add a rookie later. It's not like a lock that's 56 either, but especially like when I want to love Jonathan Brooks. So Jonathan Brooks is like, I think he's the best running back in this draft class, but
right.
Also
the injury.
I mean, you have, and the capital, right? Like, it'd be different if Jonathan Brooks was going to be like taking like low 20s or like tail end of round 1, right? Like, and a team's going to say, all right, well, we're not going to start him till, you know, potentially, you know, week 5 or week 6, or there's a ramp up period in general. Now we're talking about a guy that's going to be a rookie, 1 year of college production, coming off of an injury, probably going to be taken at the tail end of round 2, maybe the front of round 3. And like, there's just no, they're like, the investment's not going to be there to offer insulation moving forward from a dynasty perspective, because right. He's going to probably go at the 1-2 turn at the latest, assuming, again, we're theoretically throwing out like he goes pick 56 to the Cowboys. And there's just no insulation there to say like, I've got longevity. like to invest. Like the next year's draft class is good. It's really good at the running back position on paper. And I know people get tired of hearing that, like, well, next year's class, you buy these draft picks and it doesn't work out. Because everyone did that, where like buy the 2023 draft class. And in hindsight, the 2023 draft class looks bad. Like if you had all of those draft picks in last year's draft class, outside of like landing Jahmyr Gibbs or like Laporta and stuff, but like ask the people that like invested into JSN at 101, like how that looks right now. But so like when you don't have the draft capital and you don't necessarily have kind of like this runway or this platform to be offer that kind of insulation, I think it becomes real sketchy. I one of the things I want to be really cautious of in this draft class post this weekend is when I do my dynasty ranks and then we do the rookie ranks, is to not completely push up the running backs just based on landing spot. Obviously, draft capital is going to be a big part of the investment. If you look at anything for running backs, draft capital is the number one signal to future fantasy points. But again, we're talking the first running back is probably going to be taken in the 50s, 50 pluses. And that's going to rival, you know, when you go back to, so the lowest RB1 ever taken in the NFL draft is Bishop Sankey. And, you know, and we're going to push that this year.
That was so good.
and we're going to push, we're going to rival that. That's what the NFL already told us in free agency. They don't value this running back class. They don't. We had all these veterans on the free agent market and the NFL was like, yeah, we got to get these guys. We're going to aggressively play running. When the running back free agency market had been dormant for years. And they told us everything we want to know about this draft class, the way the NFL handled free agency and these veteran running backs and these aging out running backs. This draft class is not going to be
That's how I got to feel because like, so, you know, I said at wide receiver, a lot of these guys in tier three for me are like some years they might be tier two, but like maybe like the better way to say is like, because I want to just inflate their value because nobody else is there. But like maybe because of the depth, it's like all the guys in tier three are 2.5. So like when I was doing running backs this year, it's like, you know what? My three guys that I have in tier one, I'm kind of like, they feel like 1.5. Like they just like twos feel like 2.5s. Like I feel like, I know you and I and a ton of people have done all this work, and I feel like it's going to be like, you know what? I probably shouldn't have done 25 running backs. I should have cut it off at 15 because like 10 of these guys don't even matter after the draft. So I'm with you. So I think the question here too is not just the landing spot, like you said, the draft capital, but like actually evaluating what the chances of some of these guys hitting, because there's some timeshare pieces. And that's actually one of the first ones I want to talk about. So like somebody you're higher on than I am, again, relatively, you do pure ranks. I used to do pure ranks and then I did tiers because of what we're talking about right now, landing spot, draft capital, those things kind of matter. It's like where I was like, oh, I would rank them 2 instead of 5. And people are like, well, why do you have them 2 and over 5? I'm like, sure. So that's part of the reason I'm not going to do that to you and why I want to talk about this. And the player I'm going to say is he's in my tier 2. But so you know, I have legit 10 running backs, actually 11 running backs in my tier 2. It is a giant tier 2 because of this. But if you want to look at it relatively, like if I had to rank, I'm a little bit lower than Jalen Wright than you are. Again, a little bit. But my concern is that he's just going to be a pure timeshare, kind of like the bad James Cook. And that's what I put in my articles. Like the James Cook that's splitting touches. We wish he could do more. We love the talent. And actually, you can see why I do like Jalen Wright. But when I say, could you imagine the good James Cook? But right. My concern is that this NFL, I guess I kind of almost am forwarding my own vision on this and saying like I just don't see him landing on a team that's going to have him as the guy even 55%. So do you think there is that hope for that, or is kind of just the ranking this year because it's a weaker class for you having Jalen Wright again relatively a little bit higher than I do?
Yeah, I mean, I have 4 guys in my opening tier that I'm pretty much like, you know, open to move around based on kind of what happens this weekend and kind of where guys go. The top 4 guys I think like are in this class as far as like future fantasy potential. I have Jalen Wright, Trey Benson, Jonathan Brooks, and Blake Corum. Like I already said, I do believe Brooks is the best player out of all those guys. Yeah. I mean, I think that Jalen Wright though does enter the NFL at a time that I think is best for his skill set. A guy like Jalen Wright a decade ago would have been pretty dead for fantasy, I think, like that archetype of running back. And now that archetype of running back with the way the NFL is using committees, and the way guys are scoring fantasy points, because you talk about just from a top-down stance from the running back position is totally different than what it was. A guy like we talk about, like you go back to like Jahmyr Gibbs last year, and I comp Jalen Wright to being like a very poor man's like version of Jahmyr Gibbs, like a guy that played in an offensive system that didn't have him, you know, run into heavy boxes, didn't have him do any type of like inside running, pulled him at the goal line for another power back. That's like it, right. All the same stuff, like same exact profile Gibbs, but like Gibbs, like, you know, definitely offered a lot more electricity. And there's a reason why Gibbs went pick 12, and we're talking about Jalen Wright potentially going like pick 60 to 75, right? Like there's a difference. But that type of running back archetype now has a place in the NFL, the Devin Achans, the Jahmyr Gibbs, to where they're actually have a fantasy impact because we don't have any more of the LaDainian Tomlinsons, right? Like we have Christian McCaffrey and we have Breece Hall. We're hoping Bijan can get there. And then it's just a huge cliff that drops off.
We can hope Barkley can get back there.
And then we still have to do the whole thing with Barkley. Like, is he going to catch passes or score touchdowns in Philadelphia? Like, like the two big kind of bugaboos, like if you're projecting, like the damn tush push, man. We kill us. And honestly, it's funny to bring up James Cook, as they say, like the Bills adopted the tush push too last year. James Cook couldn't score touchdowns. But that type of running back now has a place in fantasy because of what's happened to the position of running back from a top-down NFL stance, and then which leads into fantasy points. So like a decade ago, a guy like Jalen Wright, if he's only getting 175 to 200 touches, we'd have been like, oh, that dude's a trap in fantasy. Like, it's not even that good. And now that guy's like a flirting with like low-end RB1 production, or is like a stable RB2 in fantasy. So like I said, I think like basically like the thread, the needle outcome for him is to be like a poor man's Jahmyr Gibbs, depending where he lands. But all four of those guys that I laid out, like it's going to be a kind of like landing spot draft capital dependent. Like I think there could be some nice jostling between those guys, depending who goes where.
So there's two guys that you're actually, this was different. This isn't, we differ on, this is like you're higher. I like both of them. Emory Hunt, who we talked to on SiriusXM yesterday, is high on both of them. So we're all, it's good. We're all in the same category here. So like either we're all wrong together or we're all visionaries. But I'm going to,
I will say that from a way I'm playing this draft class in general, just so people know, is like that running back that goes first off the board that probably goes at the 1-2 turn. Like that guy's probably not going to be in any of my rookie drafts.
These two might, and that's where I was going to go with these next two. So Isaiah Davis and Isaiah Garendo, which one? So that's different because again, you can go over at Sharp Football Analysis. Please read Reeves' work at Lord Reeves on Twitter. Follow him. But which of the two actually, if you had to guess today, regardless of landing spot, of course, who do you think actually legit? If you said, actually, if they both, put it this way, they both end up on the same team. But obviously, they're not going to. But like, if you could put them on the same team, so there are zero differences to these players. Is it Garendo or is it Davis who you think could actually be the Fetty fantasy player regardless of where they land? Like, who's built better to succeed in the NFL instead of schematically, in your opinion?
Oh, yeah. See, that's tough, man, because I do think like a guy like Garendo is kind of like, landing spot's going to matter for him. I mean, if he ends up in one of these Shanahan McVay offenses, like I think he could be excellent, right? Like what's funny is the Dolphins don't have the draft capital to do this, but he'd be like a great Raheem Mostert replacement. Like,
I can see that.
To go with Devin Achane, the guy we talked about, just never going to push 300 touches in the NFL. But like if he ends up going somewhere that doesn't have like that outside zone scheme or something, like he could end up running into trouble at the, you know, the NFL level. But I do think there are enough of those schemes because obviously everyone from the McVay tree is getting jobs now. That's like what you do is you just hire a dude that
like half the NFL now.
But so if he lands in one of those spots, I definitely think like that's where you get excited because we don't have a lot of these like bigger guys in this draft class, like the guys that are like 220 plus. And, you know, Davis is right there too, 218, one of these bigger backs, but he's got jets too. Like, I mean, home run hitter on the outside. He's fast. He ran a 99th percentile speed score. But yeah, I do think he is like, he's got to land in one of those schemes though. But where Isaiah Davis, I think, has a little more outs, like I think he's a little more functional. I don't think it's a pure ceiling that Garendo has. Like if a Garendo, or another place that Garendo would be great in the 49ers, I think Elijah Mitchell's in the final year of his contract. Are they going to be able to keep him? Obviously the 49ers have like a litany of things like they have to check off in terms of extensions. Obviously we're living this Brandon Ayuk saga. We would just love to know the answer of right now. But like, he'd be a great Elijah Mitchell replacement, you know, if you can get him, you know, on day three. But I do like guys. I think Isaiah Davis has more outs in the NFL of just being like a baseline dude. Like he fits a lot more like schemes. Whereas I think Arendo definitely want him in that outside zone run scheme.
Okay. So last running back before we hit some wide receivers, and maybe this actually ends up being your sleepers. Cause I was going to ask you like, if you had one guy like keep your eye on because he could fall in the right spot. And maybe it's Dylan Lobb for you. My concerns for him is that he's just JD McKissic. And now, granted, that has fantasy value like these days. I mean, you can be an RB3 at PPR. You might have an RB2 season. Do you see potentially more for that for him? Because that's actually probably my biggest outlier is him. And again, I'm not saying I'm right, you're wrong, you're right, I'm wrong. Just that's our biggest outlier. So I wonder if that kind of ties in. Is that like maybe your potential sleeper to keep an eye on?
Yeah, I mean, I will say definitely from a fantasy football stance, though, he's tricky eval because like these types of guys, like we've all had like the Nyheim Hines on our rosters, right? Like these guys that don't pan out from like this archetype of running back. So you do got to be careful. I do think he's just going to initially, though, have a guy, especially in this draft class, he's just going to have an initial role right away in the NFL. He's going to play special teams. He's a really good special teams player, and he's a really good pass catcher. He's really not a good runner at all. If you aren't a good runner at New Hampshire, it's definitely going to show in the NFL, like when you make a punch up in like terms of, competition. My comp for him, like coming out, like you brought up JD McKissic, I think it's really good. And it's like, you're hoping to get like a Tariq Cohen, like run out. Like he's just not a guy that's going to contribute in the run game. You're hoping he lands in a system you're hoping whoever takes Dylan Lobb, like has the forefront of understanding why they're drafting him. And to use him. And this doesn't happen a lot. You think this would happen tit for tat in the NFL, but it doesn't. But like you're hoping that like he glances in a spot to real. It's like, yes, like I maybe have like a power back. I've got my early down, grinder, and I've got this back that I'm going to use as a pass game, like an asset, like the Bears did with Tariq Cohen. He was a lower end draft capital guy. He went undrafted, right? Tariq Cohen was undrafted guy, I believe. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of what you're hoping for. Like he just goes into a system where they have the vision to use him. Like obviously pie in the sky.
Drew Brees unretires and dumps off to him.
Yes. I mean, obviously it sucks to just like use the Chiefs as an out, but like Andy Reid would be like a great spot. Cause we've seen Andy Reid get away from like what we've known Andy Reid like to use. The like backs in the passing game, they've got away from that as they haven't had that archetype. We all thought Clyde Edwards-Helaire was gonna be a dream fit, right? Like, because that was Clyde Edwards-Helaire's game at LSU. Like he was, and we just never got that transition into the NFL from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But like, what's interesting too is you look at the Chiefs. They used a couple visits on a fullback this year and Ben Sinnott, who's kind of like that tweener, like H-back guy. So I wonder if Andy Reid's going to get back to some old tricks in his bag because they haven't used the fullback for the last couple years or since they lost Anthony Sherman. So something to keep an eye on. I've noticed the Chiefs have used visits on Carson Steele from UCLA, and they've also used Ben Sinnott. And I'm like, oh, Andy might be up to something here.
Actually, I think Sinai could be – we're not going to talk too much about tight ends, but somebody to watch. Tight end, honestly, real quickly, to go back to the past couple of years and you look at it too, like, you want to talk about draft capital mattering. Like, that one was just like, watch. If they fall to, like, the fifth round, I don't care if he was in my tier two. Like, he's basically, like, off my – done. But to go back to what you're saying too is, like, can we get back to, like – remember when arrow routes and, like, the little streaks used to be so heavily – they kind of faded away a little bit. And I'm like bring these back. Get some more like these running backs doing this and just
one thing I want to see damage. if you watch some college games like Marshawn Lloyd they ran this play a few times with Caleb Williams where they run like a RPO or like a fake quarterback draw and then like you get like the tight end or the running back running like a seam route and like he was always open behind that next level. I'd love to see that play come into the NFL. Some NFL teams try to steal that play. It almost always worked every time I seen it. It was the Sex Panther.
That's where, there's the projection for Lloyd comes from, like, as a receiver, because there wasn't a ton of the receiving, but, like, you saw the potential, like, in those.
I mean, Caleb's also a guy that's just, like, he's not checking down. Like, he's extending plays.
Right. Yeah. So, with receiving, we'll talk some wide receivers before we get out of here. I actually didn't even put this in here to ask you, but I just thought about this when we were talking about Lobb and it's kind of the running back situation. The kickoff return. Everything's changing. I kind of pointed this out, and I think there's like, I think you're probably going to agree with me on this, but like a worthy type or some of those ones that are just like so dangerous with speed that could immediately hit the NFL. And kind of like if you have leagues that give the touchdown, not just for the defense scoring on a kick return, but also it goes to the player, or maybe we see the resurgence of return yards in fantasy. Not that I really want to do that, but point being, like, do you think there might be some similar spots like this where, like, you could see a player that to like go back into the days where some of these guys were drafted, they're only the third or fourth wide receiver on the depth chart, they only had 500 or 600 receiving yards, but they scored 4 or 5 touchdowns in the return game. Do you think that's potentially something we, as fantasy people, like something we should think about when we watch this draft class?
I mean, it's always been kind of a low-key hack for rookie drafts or doing projections, especially for guys that go like outside of the premier capital at the position. Because one, you get an initial way to make a roster, right? You just have an extra out of making a roster, which is half the battle when we're talking like day three and beyond guys. And then if you can make a roster, then you're just a step away from, you know, contributing, you know, as a receiver. One guy that I drafted a ton of last year, and I'm hoping it transitions this year, is was a Chuck Sizzle from Purdue, Charlie Jones, that went to the Bengals. Huge special teams guy, and now has an initial out a year later because Tyler Boyd's no longer on the roster to be potentially the starting slot wide receiver for the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that lives in 11 personnel. But it's always been a little bit of a hack. Stephon Diggs was a guy like this. When you looked at the NFL, like, he just had amazing return production. And, you know, if you can look at these guys that can just contribute in a way to make a roster or have an out, just another out in the NFL, of having, like I said, a roster spot and then cutting into like playing time as an actual wide receiver, like, that's always been a little bit of a hack. So I always look at these guys, you know, down throughout. And what's funny is we actually don't have a ton of these like return guys this year at the wide receiver position as we did in years past. They're more at the running back position than they are at the wide receiver position this year.
Yeah, but I can see, like I said, Brett Worthy. I think Franklin could be one.
Worthy should be a punt returner, basically locked in. I mean, you know, we don't see it as much in the NFL these days where, like, people use their round one asset as, like, a kick returner. But, like, Worthy should be returning punts
out of the box. And that's what I'm going to be kind of curious about. Like, we did a show a couple of weeks ago, and I said, like, sneaky defenses, because I got asked about this on CBS. It's like, sneaky defenses with that rule change. I said, because of the protection that's now on the players, could you imagine if like a team like the Dolphins goes back to using like Achan and Tyreek Hill on kick returns, just because like what that could do? Like, I'm just going to be very interested to watch this. But speaking of which, I just brought his name up, Troy Franklin. There's actually one we differ a little bit on. Again, tier, like, actually this is, so you have him one tier higher than I do. Again, relative, like, it's not, we're going to get too much into it. But like, I think he could be Devonta Smith at best, but for me, I felt he was a little bit closer to Torrey Smith, to go that route, to kind of give ideas and like might get you 2 or 3 good seasons. Speak positive. Again, this isn't about you being right, me being wrong. It's just speak positively, like, make me feel better about it. Put it that way. Make me feel better about an Oregon wide receiver for a change.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to do a good job. So like that area of rookie drafts, I think if you have like the 107 non-super flex to like the end of the like 110, I think that area is an area of the draft I'm not really comfortable making draft picks in. That area, I'd prefer to trade that pick for a veteran or trade out for multiple, you know, kind of second rounders. I think that when I use the word arbitrage a lot, and that I think this draft class, the wide receiver position, definitely offers a lot of arbitrage opportunities. I definitely think, as you've brought up the kind of the depth of this class, and I think that there's a lot of second round rookie picks this year that are going to be like comparable to a lot of those guys that go after the, I think the soft, like Brian Thomas, like when we get to the AD Mitchells, the Troy Franklins, the Xavier Worthies, like those are guys I like don't like when I look at their archetypes coming to the NFL, like I'm not necessarily like all in on those guys. And Troy Franklin from an objective stance, maybe is in that bucket, but like, I'm not comfortable.
Can I jump in for a second real quick? Let me throw out a dynasty type question for you. So, something I wrote last year, I did a dive, and again, I bring this up because my boss was the one that actually suggested to me, never thought of it, and I went down this deep dive, and he was about the hit rate of first round wide receivers. And what I found out, that year one, about 50% of them hit. For my quote unquote hit rate was top 40 in points per game or top 36 overall. And that was my kind of barometer. So about 50% hit in year two, that actually jumps to about 70, I think it was 73% or something like that. And it's actually the biggest jump is from year one to year two. There's another jump from year two to year three, but it's not, you remember, Rich, year three was, it's not year three anymore. It's actually year one to year two. And there still is a jump to year three. I'm presenting all that to say this. We saw, again, I'm going to bring up two names, Jackson Smith and Jigba, Quentin Johnston, both disappointing rookie seasons. Smith and Jigba, not overly, Johnston's was a bust, but I'm bringing that up to say this. If you were in Dynasty right now and somebody said, let's say post-draft, I'll give you Troy Franklin, I'll give you Adonai Mitchell, I'll give you, for Quentin Johnston, which, because like you're talking about it, it's kind of like, I think this is a good question to follow up, and I know I jumped in on you, but
no,
like, is this potentially a point for us to exploit in Dynasty where the disappointment, and you can even include Marvin Mims and others from last year and go down that list, where we get value from the quote-unquote disappointment from their rookie season, and actually these players are better in trades than what would be the rookies.
Yeah, to ping-pong off that, like it's actually like a great season-long fantasy hack too, not even a Dynasty hack. Year two wide receivers, I did a study on this 2 years ago, where it basically, so like you should blind draft like your two wide receivers. Like if you just did that, like you had your absolute value in redraft, like those are like, that's like the biggest home run. Like in terms of, if you're looking for an archetype wide receiver that like, oh, exceeds like ADP, your two wide receivers have like the best hit rate. So like, and you're going to have misses on those guys too, but like, that's still like the bucket of guys. And especially when you're talking about guys, like especially like Quentin Johnston, right? Like kind of left for dead, but like, he's basically going to be in a situation where at worst, he's going to be the wide receiver two on his roster this year, probably. Like the opportunity is still going to be there for him attached to Justin Herbert. So like nothing, I can't say anything positive about his rookie season. I can't, but if you just close your eyes and you say, hey, because look where he's being drafted in these opening like best ball drafts on Underdog and stuff. Like, why not? Right? Why not?
Right.
Like, like, what are you losing? Like, we've made worse draft picks higher than Quentin Johnston. but I've been grilling people on my podcast too about specifically JSN. Like, all right, what's the lowest rookie pick you'll take for JSN? And literally every answer I've gotten is 104. Like, that's like it. Like people will still say like, I would take him 104 in this draft class if he was in it. So like, you see the value is still holding over for a guy like JSN. So yeah, I mean, even if you have guys bust, like these guys hold dynasty value, they retain dynasty value. That's like kind of one of the things about them. I can say, at least if you want me to say stuff positive about Troy Franklin, like so to me, yeah, my comp for him is Tyquan Thornton. He reminds me of Tyquan Thornton at Baylor. Like, you know, a guy that, you know, caught a lot of, basically lived it. He, I don't want to use the phrase slant merchant, but like he caught a lot of, just lived on slants, man. And like the Troy Franklin definitely has, we don't want to like necessarily like harp on drops because he dropped a ton of passes, but like he definitely has a thing. And Matt Harmon brought this up too. Like he clearly has a mental thing where he doesn't trust his hands. Like he does, like when it comes to like a technical stance, like he definitely wants to catch everything with his body. And if like he has to catch things with his hands, like then you see this thing, like the 8% drop rate show up, right? Like all that stuff kind of happened. That's why I said like these guys, I mean, but if you're looking just from like a blind like signal, he's one of the youngest guys in this draft class. He's gonna be a 21-year-old rookie. The production is there. He got better every year in college, which is what you look for. You look for a guy who just improves every year. The production was there. The yards per team pass attempt, like big signals for NFL were there. But again, he's like, I don't think he's Devontae Smith. Like Devontae Smith, where we threw out like the weight stuff coming out. Because when you look at Devontae Smith coming out of Alabama, I mean, one, he's one of the few wide receivers that won a Heisman. He looked the part of playing NFL wide receiver. He didn't, there was not one time when you watched Devontae Smith, you're like, that dude's 165 pounds. Like there's a lot of times when I watch Troy Franklin, I'm like, that dude's 175 pounds. Like, you know, that's where it just exists in his game, where it's like, as I said, Tyquan Thornton was my kind of comp. Objective comps for him are like Paul Richardson, Jalen Hyatt, but that strike zone, I don't want to bet on AD Mitchell. I don't want to bet on Troy Franklin in my rookie drafts at 107. I want to trade down or trade for a veteran. Like you said, maybe I get Quentin Johnston or something like that, or trade for a veteran. Like, you know, I could get a Derrick Henry, right? Like this year from like a team that's like, maybe the team that has Derrick Henry is like, I'm competing. Because if you're picking in that strike zone, you're obviously a playoff team or on the verge of a playoff team, unless you acquired that pick from someone else. And, you know, get yourself a veteran or trade back and take two of Ricky Pearsall and, Devontae Walker, Javon Baker, whoever your flavor choice is, right, out of those guys. Get two of those guys instead of taking one and trying to thread the needle and saying, I need A.D. Mitchell to be this at 107, or I need Troy Franklin to be this at 108, or Xavier Worthy to be this in that strike zone. Get two of those guys.
Get two of them. And I'm with you on that, right? So, last one, because I don't want to keep you too long, and I appreciate
that's
it.
Fine.
Make sure you're following Rich at Lord Reeves. Make sure you go to Sharp Football Analysis and check out all this. I like it if you want big breakdowns of all of them. Great information. So I'm going to tie a name into this, and somebody like, so again, I'm done. Like my ranks are what they are, my opinions, and of course things are going to change. You and I keep talking about it. Things are going to change post-draft because of opportunities, but that being said, there's one player that's kind of been sticking in my mind since I've done this whole process, and you do have him higher than me, so you're not the only one. And something that's kind of been like kind of coming back to me as I'm doing this and I'm thinking more in my mind is like, you know what? What is the big difference between these two players? And I'm about to set this up. I definitively believe Keon Coleman is a much better player. However, when you talk about his concerns, I actually even said this in my draft. It's like his outcomes are good Kenny Golladay and bad Kenny Golladay, to kind of give you an idea of like how bad this could go, but how good it could be. And what has kind of gotten into my mind is like a lot of people are like, why are you quote unquote low? Again, tier four would probably be tier 3.5 or even higher most years. But why are you quote unquote so low on Johnny Wilson? And I was like, you know what? There are some concern similarities. I just feel like, so for me, my breaking point is so when I say good Kenny Golladay, bad Kenny Golladay for Johnny Wilson, I said best case, he's Mike Evans. Worst case, he's probably like a wide receiver five in fantasy. But I just think like if I put percentages on it, I think Keon Coleman's probably like 70% to probably be good, where I think Johnny Wilson is probably more like 40% to be good. Am I too low? Again, not saying he's definitively right and I'm wrong, but am I hating too much on Johnny Wilson? We'll put it that way.
No, I think it's you're right to be cautious, like in the same way that you were with like Dylan Labbe. It's just like, you know, that archetype is such, it's just so hard to thread the needle for fantasy on like a guy that, you know, is such an outlier, a guy that we've done this, right? Like the Chase Claypools of the world. Like, could this guy transition to tight end? Are you trying to land Marcus Colston? Listen, no one was trying to land Marcus Colston. You just ran into Marcus Colston. Like,
yes.
Right? Like, you ran into Delanie Walker. You ran into Darren Waller. Like, it's the same thing when people ask, like, who's this year's Puka Nacua? Like, good luck, dude. Like, I mean, good luck. I mean, like...
Talk to us again in 15 years when it happens the second time.
I mean, but these are things like when you try to force, like it doesn't work out. You just, it just happens, right? So Johnny Wilson's in that mold. Like, he's just such an outlier in terms of like size. And, like, does he have a natural NFL position right now that's going to, and then does that translate to fantasy points? Because, you know, that's the other thing too with like Keon Coleman. Like, we talked about the current state of the NFL. That's like Keon Coleman's like one big bugaboo is like, if Keon Coleman comes into the NFL 8 years ago, it looks great. Like the NFL is set up for like that X receiver. And now the X receiver is not dead, but you need your X receiver to do more than just be an isolated X receiver for fantasy football. Like, we need guys to be able to move around now because, you know, you're not hitting those vertical shots. Keon Coleman, and I hate to keep harping back onto like saying like we need guys to keep landing in McVay's, you know, systems. But like, if he did get drafted by one of those systems, that's like the spot for Keon Coleman in today's NFL, because like he's gonna run that 15 yard dig route. Like, if you're in an offense that's like utilizing the dig route like as part of your like top down scheme, like Keon Coleman's gonna thrive in that. Like, he's gonna eat that, he's gonna eat on that all day. So like, if he does land in one of these schemes, that's the best outcome for him, I think. But like, yeah, Johnny Wilson, I think, is just like, he doesn't have like a natural home as a position that fits in today's NFL. And I think that that's going to be like something that pulls back on him from like a fantasy perspective.
Yeah. And that's the same thing. Like, somebody was like, well, what if he moves to tight end? Would he be inside your top three? I was like, how many times, like, can we stop? Well, how many times has the wide receiver moving to tight end worked? Give me that list. Like, can we stop at this? Like, it just,
once.
Yeah, I know. Before we get out of here, do you have a sleeper at wide receiver that you're keeping your eyes on? Is it Malik Washington or is it somebody else? Malik Washington, obviously, like you're talking about something that would not, people wouldn't even care about him 10 years ago because now we're in a completely different NFL to give you because the size, speed, and that's actually the size is a little bit of my concern because the speed, yeah, it's not elite speed given his size. But anyway, is it Malik Washington? Is it somebody else that you're kind of keeping? You're like, ooh, I'm watching to see if he ends up in a good landing spot and somebody maybe I'll sneak into the third round of a dynasty and take him before people even realize it.
No, I mean, I like Malik Washington, but like there's, we know.
Did
he's
I say
not,
Wilson? Malik Washington. You know.
No, but we know Malik Washington's not going until Saturday. Like he's not getting drafted. Yeah. He's not getting drafted Thursday or Friday. So like he's kind of just like a fun, like late fourth, like whatever, maybe follow, just see where, see what kind of landing spot he lands into. He's just someone like I'm keeping an eye on as like a someone to throw at the end of drafts. Again, the current NFL does help him out right now, but like you still have to say like he's like a pure slot guy still too. He's not gonna moonlight at the X or flanker really at all in the NFL. One guy that I think I can, that I am at least saying like, man, what if he does go late Friday in the end of round three or someone takes a shot on him, though, is Jaleel McMillan from Washington. Like he's like a guy I saw at least have like hope for, could end up being drafted higher than maybe we're hoping for.
I feel like I'm higher than everybody on McMillan. I feel like I'm like this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I mean, he's, well, because he's
I
good,
think
man.
People forget pre-injury, and mm-hmm. then if you watch the championship game, he just finds space. He just, again, he's not the most elusive. He doesn't have the best track speed. Again, like, but it also, if you go back to pre-injury, there's some of those signs of it. But he just knows how to, it's hard to put this into words, Rich, but I think you'll understand. It's like he almost makes himself like the cloak from Harry Potter. The cloak of invisibility. He kind of like throws that on sometimes, and it's like defenses just forget where he is. And he's just, I don't know how to describe it better than that.
Yeah, I mean, and he could play inside out too. Like I said, I think he just really fits where the current offenses are and to combat like where the defensive meta is right now. Like you said, a guy that if you go back to 2022, he was just injured last year, just absolutely hurt. I mean, he only ran 240 pass routes last year. Only three wide receivers in this draft class ran fewer pass routes than last year. He was just banged up. Like you said, go back to the big games and see how he performed towards the end of the year when he was healthier. Yeah, he's definitely a guy. I think he could sneak into day three, depending just on how abundant wide receivers are being drafted in this draft class. Yeah. It's what's the other thing too about this draft class when you look at it, like, we're going to have probably a lot more wide receivers taken, I think, by the time Friday ends than a typical year, right? Like, we could be pushing well over 20 wide receivers in this draft. Like, realistically, it's crazy to think that. And this draft class does run that deep. I mean, we're talking about, like, when you get to, like, the guys like McMillan and, you know, Brendan Rice and Jalen Polk, like, these are guys that definitely have the look of, even if they're not fantasy contributors, they're what we talked about in the open. Like, these are going to be NFL contributors, especially with, you know, the way, you know, everyone's, the way 11 personnel is so abundant in the NFL right now. And everyone needs these guys. And this draft class was made for it because not only is this wide receiver class deep in that sense, but it's weaker at other spots too, right? Like we've already talked about, it's weaker at running back. It's weaker defensively, top down, right? Like edge rusher, like this is not a pass rush draft class at all. And you know, so like there's just a lot of other things elevating wide receivers in this draft class. So by the time we get to Friday, I think we could have over 20, like pushing 20, maybe over 20 wide receivers drafted by the end of Friday, which would rival some records.
Yeah, we would. And we're talking about a wide receiver from Holy Cross this year. That just gives you an idea of how like crazy this class is. But before
we got wild cards too. Like I don't know where, if he's going to be fantasy relevant or like where he fits, but the guy that's just like hashtag good at the game is Luke McCaffrey too. Like he's just a good football player. I don't know where that fits in from like a fantasy stance or where he lands and what he ends up playing in the NFL. But he's another guy when you see, he's just good at the game though. Like he's a guy that's just
It's funny. Like I was trying to like just good at football and you kind of like, but like I thought you were going to talk about Jaquan Jackson, but like that's just like, that's like, again, like he's just like good at playing receiver, but I mean, zero strength, just going to get overpowered in the NFL. But again, we're in a different NFL now. Like this is like where some of these guys could be relevant.
Oh yeah. You're not seeing like these guys, like beating press coverage is definitely a signal, I think, for your ceiling. But we're just, it's not a prerequisite anymore, like how you look first man coverage, because guess what? Nobody's playing man coverage anymore. And this is why stuff like wide receiver cornerback matchups have like disappeared from fantasy analysis too. It's like largely.
I love throwing this out. Do you remember talking about one of the best wide receivers in football. Best in football. Top three would be the discussion. At worst, would be third. Do you remember what Justin Jefferson's complaint was coming out of college? Do you remember what people said he couldn't do coming out of college? Could not play outside. Could not beat press coverage. Man, heavy, handsy kind of guys. And he's only going to be a slot wide receiver. And now we're talking about one of the best wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, you need that versatility. I actually look now for prospects. I'm looking for that usage at the college level, like the versatility. And I think that's why some people start the argument of, you know, Neighbors versus Marvin Harrison. And like the way the current NFL is running now, like we talked about, like Neighbors doesn't take any projection. Like he did all that stuff at LSU already, like stuff that like all that versatile stuff. Whereas Harrison, like, you know, I think he could do those things. If you move Marvin Harrison in the slot, he's going to destroy. He did that in the small sample we saw at Ohio State. I don't think it's a big leap, but like all that stuff that people value now, like the slot usage, the yak, like Neighbors had all that on display. Like you can already cite it. And I think that's why it starts with some people saying, well, I have Neighbors, you know, ahead of Marv because of the way the current NFL is. I don't. I still have Marv, but like, you know what I mean? I just think that's how the people arrive at that argument, is because the way the current NFL is being played, Neighbors already put all that on tape for people.
Yep. We're finished the show. But like
the wide receiver ones in fantasy now are not the AJ Greens. It's the Amon Ross. It's the CD Lambs.
What's funny I was going to say is that's why, again, we're being nitpicky. Okay. My tier one are three wide receivers, Harrison, Adunze, and Neighbors. But with Adunze, again, because of something you brought up in this show, my slight hesitation. And that why I would take Neighbors if like I had to pick between the two is because what you talked about, more zone. Like I just don't love his play versus zone. Again, we're only, you know, it's college NFL, and it's college defenses are a little bit different in the schematically and everything like that. But like I just find a little, like I just wish he found that those like little holes a little bit better at times. And like that's why I'm just like, if I'm pushed, I'm taking Neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we kind of have a soft like one like mini tier, right? Like it's Neighbors and Marv, because at rookie drafts, like I haven't seen Adunze go ahead of either of those in any draft I've done already. Yeah. I've had four leagues already draft. I am in four leagues that draft before the NFL draft. I recommend everyone try that format if they've never done it. It's super fun. But I haven't seen Adunze go over the other two. Where
it's funny is like more and more I think about it, I kind of want to put Adunze and Brian Thomas in kind of like this little mini tier, but I would still take him 10 times out of 10 over Thomas. So it's kind of like, do I need like a 1.3 and a 1.7 and then like tier two? Like, but anyway, this is how crazy this class is. Before you get out of here, tell everybody what you got coming up, the draft coverage, everything. Like promote yourself before you get out of here, Rich.
I mean, like you, I'm waiting to see, you know, landing spots. Enjoy this weekend. You know, the NFL draft's always a fun time. It's a fun time because if you're in dynasty leagues, it does spark the most activity. This is like the 2-week run where like dynasty is like really, it's kind of their Christmas, right? It really is dynasty Christmas this time of year. But yeah, I'll be doing post-draft rookie rankings. I can't wait to plug these guys into the projections. I've been working on projections all week to start this week. And hopefully I have all the teams done where I can plug the rookies in so we can kind of see, you know, Mike Clay does a better job than I do, but you know, you see Mike Clay, well, a guy will get drafted and he'll have like the soft projection. And people are like, you're an idiot, Mike Clay. You don't have this guy projected for 100 receptions as a rookie, you know? So I can't wait to plug those guys in, get excited, do the rookie rankings, do dynasty rankings, plug these guys into official dynasty rankings and kind of, you know, see where they fit in. All that stuff will be at sharpfootballanalysis, .com. So check that stuff out after the draft.
Yeah, please do. One of the best in the business. And like you said, I'm doing the same thing. And I didn't even, I know Steven Sims is on my Texans, but I didn't even put him like he's not going to make the roster. But, make sure you're following at Lorb Reeves, one of the best. And if you want to talk video games with him on Twitter, he'll happily do that, and TV shows and stuff like that. He's just like me. We're too much alike. And that's why we could spend way too much. I wasn't even going to go an hour, but somehow
my son saw Dune 2 8 times.
Seriously?
He went 8 times.
Wow. The problem is, like, I want to see Dune 2, but I'm going to wait for it to go home because Nicole never saw Dune 1, so we got to go back and watch that so she can watch it with me. So I know the time investment I'm getting there. But anyway, time investment, like I said, I'll be back Friday. Meanie's going to be with me to recap round one. And then on Monday next week, Ian Hardis, who I know Rich likes as well because Ian is also a great one, but Rich is my favorite. We'll see you next week. We'll be right back.
Thank you.